Hour number four of Big Show in the Morning. Brought to you by Grey Wolf Golf Course. My name is Matt Rose. Sitting across from me is Will Nault. We're getting into it with our friend and yours, Ryan Pike. A little bit later on, we'll hear from Derek Dennis of the Stampeders. Talk a little bit of Stamps. They will open up week five Thursday on the road, taking on the Edmonton Elks. But first off, we do go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to talk to Ryan Pike from Flames Nation. It's a lovely Tuesday. How are you, Pike?
Well, it's the calm before the storm. I mean, there's a lot of stuff happening, and I think everyone, myself included, is just sort of trying to make sure we have all our bases covered for prep, because once things get going, they're going to get going very, very rapidly.
Are you going to stuff your face with the Montreal smoked meat, or are you staying here?
Bagels?
I'm staying here, unfortunately, but I've told Pat not to send me too many photos of the delicious things he's eating, because I will just openly weep if he does that.
But
well, you just encouraged him, no?
This is true. We know Pat well. He likes twisting the knife if he can.
That would be a fact. Yes, I would agree. Like you mentioned, there's lots to look at this week. The Flames don't have a first round pick, so not necessarily expecting a ton to come from Thursday. But I was saying it all day as well. Brad Treliving has a knack for making the NHL draft interesting for Flames fans. Over his entire tenure as a general manager.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Brad has a reputation, and a well-earned reputation is basically being someone who talks to everybody, every agent, every GM, he probably talks to the stick boy in every building if he could, just to figure out what's going on and who's available and, you know, what's going on league-wide. So, I mean, we've seen in the past, I mean, you know, the 2015 draft, where the day before the draft, they got Dougie Hamilton. They've done moves to get, let's see, off the top of my head, Dougie Hamilton, Brian Elliott, Travis Hamonic, Elias Lindholm, and Noah Hanifin. I mean, Brad just likes making trades. And I think that the nice thing is, especially, like, it's the first in-person draft since 2019. It's easy. Like, if I hassle you guys, I text you on the phone, it's easy to ignore. You can just put the phone down and walk away. Yeah. If we're in person, I can just corner you and say, are we doing this trade or not? And I think that's one of the things that Brad really likes doing. I mean, he's a big dude, but he's also persistent as heck. And I think he lays a lot of this groundwork throughout the year, and then he gets to the draft and says, are we doing this or not? So I think that might be his catchphrase this week, in terms of, you know, there's a lot of things the Flames are looking at. There's a lot of, you know, balls in the air. I mean, and let's be honest. I mean, the big elephant in the room is Johnny Gaudreau. The slightly smaller elephant in the room is Matthew Tkachuk. And then they can't really do much of anything substantially until they get those two gentlemen done and or open up more cap space. So right now, the Flames don't look like they'll be a major player in free agency, because they don't really have a lot of wiggle room. But if some dominoes fall in particular ways, they could be a very big player come July 13th.
Did you just imply that Brad Treliving uses his size, his height, to intimidate other NHL GMs?
I think he uses his persistence. His persistence is the intimidation part. Because you're like, oh, God, when's Brad going to leave me alone? And the answer is, when you give him a clear answer, that's when Brad leaves you alone.
He is a tall guy as well. Anyway,
he's not small. I mean, no. he played pro hockey. He was a D-man. You know, he won't fall over in a stiff breeze. Let's put it that way.
Yes, very fair. You had mentioned it as well. Obviously, pretty much everything's on the back burner until things get sorted with Johnny Gaudreau. Have your feelings, your thoughts, your opinions on this process changed maybe over the weekend, or for you, status quo?
I think status quo. I mean, you know, I think the longer we hear nothing, I think it's natural to be a little bit anxious about things, because until he's signed, he's not signed. And, you know, this is the week, I think, where the Flames would want to get a sense of what's going on one way or the other, because let's just say that the Flames put out a press release tomorrow or on the weekend saying Flames have signed Johnny Gaudreau 8 years, however many millions. The first problem they have to deal with is, one, whatever deal you sign Matthew Tkachuk to, or Johnny Gaudreau to, Matthew Tkachuk will turn to his agent and says, yeah, that sounds good, give me that too. And he'll have a very good case for getting that, considering he's younger and almost as productive. Mm-hmm. And the other problem is, if you spend $20 million bucks on two guys, I mean, they're very good, But $20 million out of an $82 million cap hit, for the whole team, you're spending quarter of your money on two guys. You need to figure out ways to field a team, and that involves, let's just say hypothetically the Flames don't sign Johnny Gaudreau. You know, it sucks, but they could still field a team without really needing to jettison anyone substantial. Like, you wouldn't need to go begging hat in hand to Arizona, Seattle, whoever, and say, can you take Sean Monahan? Can you take Milan Lucic? Mm-hmm. Can you give us something good for Michael Backlund? Like, you're not really going to be trying to jettison substantial pieces and beg other teams to give you cap help. The minute that you sign Johnny Gaudreau and or Matthew Tkachuk, you're going to be going, oh, man, you got to sign like eight guys and you have $7 million to do it. And a couple of those guys in Shillington and Mangiapane are not going to be cheap. You're probably going to spend your entire cap space on, depending on the length of deals you get, just signing the three RFAs in Gaudreau will be more than the cap space they have available. So if they want to keep all their guys and their preference is to keep all their guys, almost out of necessity, they have to do some wheeling and dealing. And that's honestly why my expectation is we're probably going to hear something out of the Flames over the next week, because they almost have to in order to have any kind of breathing room cap-wise.
Now, as we are at this point and Johnny Gaudreau really getting to free agency is becoming more and more of a reality, I think, for a lot of Flames fans, you got to explore the alternates. And Nick Kypreos, I believe he said on his show Kipper and Bourne out in Toronto on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, that he thought that one of the players that the Flames should try and reach out to if things don't work out with Johnny Gaudreau is Nazem Kadri. Thoughts on the idea, the notion, the report?
I love the player. The things that make me nervous are, one, he's going to be 32 this year, so there's a little bit less tread left on the tires, and he's had injury challenges, so he's been excellent, but are you sure you're going to get what you get for long term? I'd be nervous about spending a lot of money on a guy in that age bracket, and I think both on that hit with Kipper and Bourne, and on 960 yesterday with Sandra and Pat in the afternoon, Elliot sort of, he didn't really throw cold water on that, but he also went, yeah, but remember, I mean, the Flames had a deal basically done with Toronto to get Nazem Kadri a few summers ago, and Kadri put the brakes on it. He had a no trade, and he said, no, I don't want to go to Calgary. And granted, he explained later on that, after he got traded to Colorado, his whole thing was, yeah, he wanted to stay in Toronto. It wasn't a not Calgary thing. It was a please keep let me stay in Toronto kind of thing. But I mean, if you're the Flames, do you want to be spending a not insubstantial amount of money and time and effort recruiting a guy who a couple of years ago said no to your franchise? Mm-hmm. And so I think that might be factoring into it too. So, but on the other hand, I mean, it looks like Philip Forsberg might be re-signing in Nashville, and the list of guys who could. You're not going to replace Johnny Gaudreau. Like, you're not replacing 40 goals and 115 points. Like, it's just, you're not going to just turn around and go, that guy is the exact replica of that guy. Let's just replace him. Everything's the same. So you're not just going to replace him, but the list of guys who could even come anywhere close to doing that on the free agent market is extremely, extremely small. And if Forsberg signs in Nashville, it gets very small. So I think if you're the Flames, if there are some hard feelings or some, any hesitance about Kadri, I don't know if they might have much of a choice, because who else is going to score goals for you?
I feel like James Neal signing a few years back is a little bit of a feeling. It's created a feeling of caution as far as if Johnny's not there, what do we do instead? What happens next instead?
I think that's fair. And I think, I'll say this for the Flames. I think they've done well learning from their mistakes, because with James Neal, there was a very narrow window for James Neal working well. It was basically, James Neal's a goal scorer. So you put him in a role where he can score goals and he'll be great. And unfortunately, when the Flames, that training camp, Sean Monahan was coming off a wrist or a hand injury. And so the Flames prefer not to have them taking faceoffs, because while your hand's still, while you're still getting in the speed of things, you don't want to get whacked or thwacked on the hand and sort of re-break it in training camp. That wouldn't be smart. So they put Elias Lindholm on that line, and it just clicked, and all of a sudden the spot that James Neal seemed to be signed for, the right wing spot on the top line, disappeared. You're not going to use James Neal as a shutdown center or a shutdown winger. So his spot's gone on the second line. Third line, you're sort of playing with the remnants. And he ended up on the fourth line for portions of the one season he was here. And so, you know, you don't want to spend a lot of money bringing in someone and you go, well, if they don't work with so-and-so, they're not going to work at all. And, you know, I'll say this for Blake Coleman. Blake Coleman played with a lot of different guys in a lot of different situations, and he was good. He was good in a lot of different situations, and I think that might be the type of move the Flames would look to make in the event that Johnny Gaudreau goes elsewhere. You know, you're looking for someone that can come in and do a lot of different things for you, because I think, you know, one of the big challenges the Flames had both under Jeff Ward and Bill Peters was they basically had guys who can only do one or two things, and if they weren't doing those one or two things, they weren't really helping the team win. Whereas I think the trend towards, you know, lack of a better term, more Suttery players over the last couple of seasons, I think it's given the Flames a lot more flexibility, because the Suttery players they've gone and looked for and gone and gotten have had a little bit more utility in them in different situations, where, you know, you go out and get Yarncroke, and Yarncroke can play in all kinds of different situations. You go out and get Coleman. Coleman can do a lot of different things. Toffoli was killing penalties. Toffoli was on the power play, things like that. So I think that might be the kind of move they look for. And I think, you know, they're going to try to, if they need to, find some guys that have a bit of runway left in their careers and a bit of runway left in their utility. Because, you know, if you're not going to replace Johnny Gaudreau with one guy, it's going to take a lot of guys doing a lot of different things to do it if it comes to that.
He is Ryan Pike of Flames Nation joining us here 2 days away from the NHL draft. Calgary will not pick until round two, number 59 overall, but we'll see if that changes between now and Thursday and or Friday. I'm curious, the one guy we haven't talked a lot about, I think it's died down a little bit because of the injury, but everyone points to Lucic, and you can understand why in terms of trying to clear cap space. Where are you at, Pike, on the future of Sean Monahan?
Oh, my big question is, what is he? Because last year he was a fourth line center, and I think even he would say he wasn't great at it. He was sort of bounced between the third and the fourth lines. He didn't, you know, I think the challenge for him was when he was on the power play, he could still get that shot off. And as long as he's got that shot, he's got something. He'll be an NHL player as long as he can score those goals from the slot area. But in terms of everything else, I mean, he, you know, from a possession standpoint, from a 5-on-5 standpoint, he needed to be carried a bit. And he, to be completely blunt, he wasn't put with guys who could carry him. And if he finally has his hip issues behind him, which, you know, knock on wood, hopefully he does, because, you know, anyone who's had, you know, anything close to a hip injury, it sucks. Like, you can't do anything. You can't move anywhere. You know, every part of your life is terrible. So hopefully that's behind him. But if he's anywhere close to what he used to be, like the Sean Monahan of 3 years ago, there's still a ton of value there. And I think if you're the Flames right now, if you think he's a bottom six center, he's an extremely expensive bottom six center, and I don't know what you can do with him with the cap space he takes up. But if you're another team, if you're the Flames, can you talk to a team and be like, hey, you know, Seattle, hey, Ottawa, hey, whoever else, you know, he can score goals, and, you know, he's a veteran player. He wears a letter, and I still think there's a lot of value in different types there. I just think the challenge for the Flames and for any acquiring team is, you know, you're not really going to know what his on-ice value is until he gets to training camp. And I think if you're the Flames, if you're anyone else, if you're making that kind of move for that kind of player with that kind of cap hit, you probably want to know what he has left in the tank before you get him.
You just had a piece on Flames Nation. What, as we look at the Flames draft, obviously, as I mentioned, don't pick until number 59. But what's been the trend that you found under this management group?
Well, they love the Canadian Hockey League. They, you know, I think 20 or 21 of their 51 picks they've made so far have been from the CHL, which, you know, is not to be unexpected. I mean, the Flames own a Canadian Hockey League team. They scout the heck out of the leagues. They've sort of gone in different trends. They've, you know, done mostly OHL players, but, you know, between the OHL and WHL, those are the two most consistent leagues they draft out of. They get a lot of, you know, they've done more forwards than anything else, more centers than anything else. So if we were looking for sort of the platonic ideal of what a Flames draft pick would be, it would probably be a left shot center from the OHL. And, you know, the nice thing for them is there's a few of those available probably when they pick. And I think that'll be kind of the thing they look at. But I mean, you know, they need a little of everything coming up. So I think I'm willing to bet money that they are not going to draft a goalie with the three picks they have available, because they've drafted three goalies in 3 years. But I think they're going to try to really focus on building up their defensive reserve list a bit and building up their center depth if they can. I think they've been really happy with the centers they've got in the last couple of drafts. I mean, you know, Jack Beck can play a bit of center, but he's primarily a winger, played a fair bit of center for Ottawa this year. He was fantastic. Rory Karens was second in the OHL in scoring. And was pretty good in the games he got into the Calder Cup for the AHL. But, you know, I think, you know, you get a Jack Beck, you got to get a Rory Karens, you go, great, we have like five more of them. And I think that's what they'd love to have.
And then before we let you go, anything you can tell us or our listeners about the event center in Calgary?
Ugh, whole lot of nothing right now. They're making incremental progress, but I think it's like moving a very, very big ship. It's very slow to move and very slow to turn. And once it gets going, they have a ton of momentum. But, you know, I think right now it's still sort of a holding pattern until they get any kind of substantial progress. And we probably won't get, based on the meeting yesterday, we probably won't get a lot of substantial news until probably closer to the fall.
Feels like we could have clipped your answer a couple weeks back and just kind of rehashed that over and over. It's been moving quite slowly.
Yeah, I think for your listeners, just get a clip of me, just sort of my beleaguered sigh, and it's like, okay, how's the arena going? They don't have a deal yet. So until they have a deal, it's going to be slow going.
I just think where they'd be about 7 months into construction right now.
Man.
Oh. We'd be wearing hard hats and taking photos, guys.
Sad. Great. It's very sad.
Thanks for your time today, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thanks for leaving us with this very sad note, Ryan.
We'll try and...
Hey, it's your fault for asking the sad stuff at the end.
That's a good point, I guess.
No. He can't turn the blame on us. That's unfair. I'm going to blame him, and I'm going to feel like I'm in the right in this situation. Ryan's bringing us all down. See you, Pike. Thanks for jumping on, as always.
Take care.
Ryan joined us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, 14-time Consumer Choice Award winner for takeout or delivery. Call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza, 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast.
He had enough. He was like, okay.
This bit's been gone on a bit too long.
You're bad-mouthing me. I'm getting out of here.
Dragged through the mud. I am out on the train tracks here.
I'm never answering your calls again.
That's not good. Don't do that.
No.
Need them every once in a while.
No. It is sad, the state
brutal.
Of the arena.
The event center. Taking too long. That's my hot take. Wish they'd started. That's my take.
It'd be 7 months into construction right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. There would have been a frame. There would have been more than just a big hole in the ground. Too bad. Oh, well. Take a quick break around the corner. Talk a little bit of CFL. Stampeders back on the practice field a little bit later today. They will travel to Edmonton on Wednesday, and then they will play the Elks on Thursday. And Dave Dickinson will join Will and I Wednesday morning as well. We'll hear from Derek Dennis around the corner. That's next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Back inside, and welcome. Happy Tuesday. Hope it's going better than your Monday. My name is Matt Rose. Will Nault sits across from me. This program brought to you by Grey Wolf Golf Course. You can book your tee times now at greywolfgolf.com. The number one rated public golf course in British Columbia by Score Magazine. Some of the best mountain golf that you can find. Wanted to spend a little bit of time to talk a little CFL here.
British Columbo.
British Columbo. Yikes.
How about that game last night? It was actually highly entertaining.
So, do you know what is hilarious? It was a four-year anniversary for my girl and I yesterday.
Get this man a round of applause, Garrett.
So, obviously, I wasn't allowed to...
Thank you. The live audience here is a little delayed.
They took a moment to realize that was actually a fact.
I had to fact check it.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't given a lot of leeway for watching the Bombers and Argos game, given the stakes of the evening. So we got home from being out, and there was about 4 minutes left in the game. So I figured, okay, we'll throw the game on. I know it's a tight game. We'll see how it goes. And, of course, Markeith Ambles catches that touchdown pass after the penalty. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm really enjoying this. And she goes, that's enough. And she switches the channel. She's like, it's going to overtime. You can watch overtime tomorrow. No problem. Whatever. Don't worry about it. And then I get a notification from you. Just lol, I think it was. And sure enough, open up my phone. Boris Beattie shanks the PAT. And the Bombers beat the Argos 23-22. So I watched the final 4 minutes. Watched them march the field. Score the touchdown. And then turned it off right before Boris Beattie missed the PAT.
I think you need to educate Haley on the CFL. That's what you need to
Never
do.
A dull moment, Will. Oof. That's the one thing you can count on.
Don't turn the game off until it's over, folks. Lesson learned from Matthew. It's okay, though. Bizarre game. I think the Argos, you know, it's kind of been the story of really the CFL this season. Teams that have been very quiet in the first half and then turn it on in the second half. And
especially in our market here.
Yes, and Toronto was, I wouldn't say a no-show, but certainly did not play well to begin the game and were essentially dominant in the final two quarters and should have forced overtime. I also saw that, surprise, surprise, Andrew Harris was interviewed and said, yeah, I would have liked to go for two to try and get the win, but kicking the extra point was the smart coaching move by Ryan Dinwiddie. What he, didn't think was going to happen was his kicker was going to miss that.
Yeah.
So the Argos dropped to 1-2. Bombers are 4-0, and they haven't even played great football.
No, they've
which is
been
crazy.
Extremely average the entire time. They should have at least gone to overtime against the Argonauts in this most recent game. I thought Ottawa played them very well in the first 2 weeks of the season, but just too little, too late. You know, a dime short and a dollar late. I don't know. Something else, but they were close. Just not close enough to beat the two-time defending champions. You know, Winnipeg looks like they've lost a little bit of a step, perhaps. No Harris is certainly significant. Oliveira and Augustine have been getting better, but still not been ideal for the Winnipeg Blue Bomber, or for the run game of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Like, you can tell that Harris not being there is, it's different. And I think that at this point in the career of Andrew Harris, he was outstanding in that game against his former team. I'm not surprised. But really where he helps your team is in the fourth quarter, especially when you have a lead. He's the guy that can go out there and run guys over, run the clock down, get you 6, 7, 8 yards almost every carry just because he's so strong that, you know, if you give him a half-decent hole on back-to-back run plays, you're probably getting a new set of downs. That's just how it is. Stampeders back on the practice field. They have been since Sunday. Traveling Wednesday. They open up week 5. Only a 3-game slate for week 5 with a couple of teams, three teams going to be on a bye this week. The Red Blacks will play the Rough Riders Friday night. The Blue Bombers will play the Lions Saturday. That one will be a very good game with a couple of undefeated teams. Nathan Rourke has been outstanding so far. That might be the biggest test for the Blue Bombers yet. We shall see if they can beat BC at home where they've been outstanding.
It certainly feels like Winnipeg can't bring their B game to that one and expect to win. So
Nathan Rourke will throw for 400 yards and 4 TDs.
Now, BC did face their first bit of adversity in week 4 as they beat the Red Blacks by 3. And Rourke threw his first 2 interceptions of the season, but was still able to collect himself and help guide the BC Lions to victory. But yeah, when you're looking at, of course, Battle of Alberta is cool and fun, and Trey Ford has been his own cool story as well at quarterback for Edmonton. He took over in week number 4 and probably, you know, shouldn't have won that game, but thanks to Dane Evans, they do. It'll be a fun opportunity for Calgary fans to see Trey Ford for the first time. Maybe you didn't watch a lot of the Elks and Ticats last weekend, but yeah, the two Canadian quarterbacks, both in BC and Edmonton, have been fun stories this year, and Yeah, I think game of the week is probably Saturday with Winnipeg and BC.
Edmonton-Calgary has its own different set of allure because, as you mentioned, it's the Battle of Alberta. Edmonton now has their first win of the season. These are two teams that are going to play each other four times over the course of the year, so you know that point differential is significant. These games are fun because they are a situation where you want to run up the score. It's not necessarily frowned upon to run up the score because it's going to be significant at the end of the year. So that's going to be fun to keep an eye on. Dave Dickinson was asked about facing Trey Ford, who was the eighth overall pick in the 2022 draft, and said, "We know what we're dealing with because, well, we did our homework.
We're familiar with him because we worked hard on the draft process. I think he's young, but he's confident. You can tell he enjoys the game, and we just got to make sure we're tight on our details. He'll make his plays. He can throw. He can run. We'll challenge him, and also see how, always question their decision making as well. Young quarterbacks, you want to give them multiple looks. That's what we're going to try to do."
Does he do his media availability right after doing sprints, or what happens?
So they always do their huddle at the middle of the field, and then Dave jogs over from the huddle.
Okay.
And that was the first question of the scrum as well.
Right.
So he kind of evens out. Like, if we go, he had eight questions. So eventually he was asked about having bye weeks in the layout.
It's nice that they're in the summer for your out of football life.
Normal.
No problem.
That's why I was just curious if he did sprints right before his media avail.
Yeah, he's always done it.
That's the tradition.
Yeah, as soon as he's done giving his post-practice message to the team, they stay out on the field and they do their hip hip hooray. They put their helmets up and they all cheer, and he runs over and he does his media avail.
Nice.
And it's good. He's got a little bit of pace to it. Gets out there, answers a few questions, and adds a little ambiance because he's huffing and puffing.
Like,
it makes you feel like, hey, this is a coach that works, man. This guy does stuff. And I will add, he does a lot of push-ups and the plank on the sidelines when he's letting like Mark Killam run special teams, that type of thing. Guy's pretty strapped. Anyways, another guy who's pretty strapped is Derek Dennis. He's an offensive lineman for the Stampeders. Got a chance to talk to him about the bye week, family, being 3-0, being back in the CFL after a long year off, and also hot dogs. My chat with Derek Dennis from Tuesday, from Monday.
We're here with Derek Dennis as we're getting set for week five action. The team back from a bye, fourth game of the season for the Calgary Stampeders. Derek, how was your bye week?
Bye week was good, man. I got a chance to get home, get some sun. Some extremely hot weather, but got a chance to see my kids, get a little time off, so it was good, man. I'm excited to get back to it.
Back in Arizona, so very dry, a little bit different than up here?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the dryness is a little different. It's just the extreme heat. You know, you're talking 40-plus degrees in Arizona, so it did throw me off a little bit because being up here for 2 months kind of threw me off from being used to that extreme heat, but it was nice to get some sun.
Kids are pretty young, but how excited were they about you coming home 3-0?
Super excited, man. Super excited. My son, every time I speak to him on the phone, when he gets a chance to watch the game, he always gets super excited that he saw me on the TV at some point and that we won the game. And he always say, "Congratulations, man." So as a dad, man, that's like something that's super fulfilling.
Awesome. Love that. How are you feeling coming out of three games of action so far, veteran, and a couple years off for you as well with the pandemic and everything that went in it?
I'm feeling good, actually, man. The season's going well. Just trying to, stay focused and locked in to keeping myself healthy so I'm able to play a full season, man, because it's pro football. The biggest thing is making sure yourself is available, and then once you know you're available, making sure you're being able to play at a high level. So right now the body's feeling good. Like I said, excited to get back to it.
A very unique situation in the sense that you had a couple years off and then come back to the sport without retiring or anything along those lines necessarily, but how have you felt that's gone for you, in a positive or kind of negative light?
Actually, it might have been a positive, me taking the year off and getting a chance to just let my body relax. It's been my pro football career has been about 10 years now, maybe 10, 11 years consistent, kind of off and on thing. The good thing is when you're a vet and you're a pro and you're used to being in an environment, you know what to expect. So it wasn't like I was going to something that I never handled before. It was just making sure that, I took care of my body. The biggest thing that I've always been telling people is that I changed my diet. I started eating a lot better, so it was able to give me the energy and keep my body able to keep up with the grind.
Is that something where you're, like, cooking a lot at home, even up here in Canada, or is that just a change in what you're ordering, per se?
It's a mixture. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm the best cook in the world, but I try to, you know, stay healthy with it. Most of the time, I have actually a meal plan just because, you know, with football, sometimes after a grueling day, it's kind of hard to get up in the kitchen and stand on your feet and do stuff. So, Buka has a, you know, a healthy kitchen that he has a partnership with, and he kind of hooked it up where guys on the team could get a meal plan. So I've actually been doing that and getting healthy meals from a dedicated kitchen. So it's been kind of helping me keep my weight in check and being able to keep myself feeling good.
Offensive line play has been really strong this year, but there's always ways that you can improve. What are some of the things that you guys can improve on as you get into the second half of the first half of the season?
I think it's improvement is always something that you always have to constantly be prepared for in pro football, man. Nobody is going to be perfect. The game of football itself is an imperfect game, man. But it's always being able to be locked into the details. Offensive line is one of those positions where you got to have five guys on the same page being able to play as a group, right? So it's not like a one-man show where guys at certain other positions could just make a play and kind of compensate. We got to make sure we're all communicating, we're all understanding what we're seeing, and we're all making sure that we're doing what we've been practicing all week to execute. So I think we've been doing a really good job. Like I've stated before, I mean, Sean McEwen is probably one of the best centers in the game, man. He's in a super smart dude, man. He knows the offense just as good or better than the coaches, and he does a great job of communicating, making sure we're all on the same page, we're understanding things, and we really lean on him for that. So me being another vet in the room who's seen a lot of stuff, being able to communicate certain looks, kind of helping Julian out, because he's still early in his career, and, you know, giving him certain things to be prepared for. And you got a veteran guy like Seaver, too, who's got a lot of games under his belt, and then you know, bringing a guy like Zach Williams along and getting him acclimated to things. So I think as a group of five, we've been doing a really good job of playing together. And I think also what we've been doing is playing a physical brand of football. And I think that's what's helped us kind of establish this early start.
Bo Levi Mitchell said something, I believe it was last week, that in the Hamilton game, there was a moment where the offensive line kind of came up and said, hey, we want to run the ball. We want to run it right over the middle of these guys. What is that kind of process like for the offensive line to come to the coaches or come to Bo and say, hey, this is something that we've seen that we can maybe key on here to help us win this contest?
I think we understand that the game is won and lost in the trenches. If you look at all other teams and the situations that they're in, the game is won and lost from the O-line and D-line standpoint, man. If you got an O-line who's moving a line of scrimmage, who's getting guys a couple yards off the ball and giving the running back a chance to find the holes, giving the quarterback time to see his routes develop down the field, you're going to have a pretty successful offense. And I think we've been doing a really good job outside of maybe, you know, BC, who's been doing really well as well, of making sure we stay on task with our game plan. So I think we as a unit, we take it upon ourselves to understand that if we play well, team's going to do well. So that's what we try to do.
Last one for me. Happy 4th of July, first off. Joey Chestnut was out there housing dogs earlier today. So I wanted to ask, of your starting five, who could house the most dogs?
On the team?
Starting offensive line.
Okay. Zach Williams for sure. That dude can eat. And he's like a power lifter, which is crazy, which he kind of really is. Like, he takes in the high calorie intake, and you could tell every day, it's all we talk about is food. You know, you love food.
Yeah.
So I would, number one, I would definitely say Zach. Bryce Bell can throw down too as well. Julian can eat too, man. So if I had to say starting five, it would be Zach number one for sure, and then I'd probably give Bryce Bell two, and then Julian three, and then me and Sean would probably come on the 4-5 spot.
Appreciate it, Derek.
Yeah, no problem, man.
There you go. That's Derek Dennis, offensive lineman for the Stampeders, and his hot dog housing power rankings for the offensive line. Pretty good.
If you haven't seen Zach Williams before,
massive dude.
You can understand why he's Derek's pick. Dude is a monster, and I've seen clips of him in the gym. Yeah, the dude's an animal. So not surprised that he's number one on the list.
Not shocking that he also had a little tryout with the Indianapolis Colts after his 2021 season. Obviously didn't work out, but build some confidence that he's back up with the Stampeders. He's playing that left guard position beside Derek Dennis. He also mentioned Julian Good-Jones, who is hopeful to return to the NFL after this campaign as well. He's been dynamite. The offensive line's been really good for the Stampeders. It certainly hasn't been an issue for the team. They'll look to go to 4-0 Thursday when they take on the Edmonton Elks. That'll pretty much do it for our show today. This has been brought to you by Grey Wolf Golf Course, the number one rated public golf course in British Columbia by Score Magazine. The 2022 tee sheet's now open. You can book your tee times now at graywolf.com. Tomorrow on the program, it's a Wednesday. Dave Dickinson is going to join us to talk about the Stampeders. We're going to be joined by Ben Wagner to talk a little bit of Blue Jays. Anything else that I might be missing there, boys in the back?
We're chasing Chris Peters to talk some draft.
Love that. Draft will be on Thursday. Pat Steinberg is wheels up to Montreal today. So we'll also be touching base with Pat over the course of the week, too. Coming up next, Blair and Barker, the Blue Jays show, CBS with Jim Rome coming up at noon. Jays Plus, Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon and Sandra Persina at 2 o'clock, and then Pat Steinberg and Ryan Pinder at 4 o'clock with Flames Talk. That's all before we get you the Blue Jays and the Athletics. 7:40 start from Oakland. Our coverage will begin at 7 o'clock. UC Kikuchi will face Adrian Martinez on the mound. Enjoy Blair and Barker. Talk to you tomorrow. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.